Hesh, Hesher Dude, Hesher McHesherton, El Hesherino, and Hesher the Magnificent.
Who calls him that?
Brian McClain is Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. How's everyone doing out there? Hope you're having a great day. That was a great Patrick Henningsen show leading up to Brian McClain's show here. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, today's News Talk. Visit us on the web. That's tntradio.live for all things TNT. Really enjoyed that last hour there. That was great. With Patrick Henningsen and Dr. Bailey, I believe. Really good. All right. Well, let's see here. So first hour, you just got me. And I want to pick up right where I left off. Forgive me for not jumping straight into headlines or anything, but yesterday we were in the middle of, we spent hour three of the show yesterday, just sort of, well, we went through a couple articles, actually. We're talking about transhumanism, very interesting topic, and many people, their contention is that everything we're seeing from COVID to climate emergency to mRNA biotechnology shots becoming a thing in society, to you know, climate, to Ukraine, Russia, all this stuff, it's all pushing us, nudging us in a direction, and all of these things fit under the umbrella of technocracy. And I started the third hour of yesterday's show talking about a recent article by Patrick Wood called "Biden Uses Executive Order to Institutionalize Eugenics and Transhumanism." That's a hot off the press, pretty much came out September 14th of 2022, so about a week ago. And in that, and you know, I won't go over the whole thing again. You'll have to go back to yesterday's show to you know, pick up this first part, but I'll just do a quick highlight here. So this is concerning the National Biotechnology and Biomanufacturing Initiative Executive Order. It was created by the President Biden's executive order on September the 12th. And it mandates all agencies to coordinate a whole of government approach to advance biotechnology and biomanufacturing to help us achieve societal goals, which are very loosely defined, not really defined at all. So they want to submit reports assessing how to use biotechnology and biomanufacturing to achieve medical breakthroughs, reduce the overall burden of disease, and improve health outcomes. That's what's in their wording. So, well, what are those outcomes? Well, they're directed toward health, climate change, energy, food and agriculture, and supply chains. Okay, there you go. Societal goals. Talk about all the things that are being stuck in a controlled demolition right now. So another thing here, to develop genetic engineering technologies and techniques to be able to write circuitry for cells and predictably program biology in the same way in which we write software and program computers, unlock the power of biological data, including through computing tools and artificial intelligence. All right, so I don't know how that sits with everybody, but I don't know when the last time your life was improved by biological data through computing and artificial intelligence, but maybe there's an argument to be made for that. I have a friend who's in the medical sciences, one of my colleagues, and he does good work that might be involved with that, but it's very kinesthetic, if you will. He works with prosthetics, basically fixing people who have knee problems and such. So, you know, maybe there's an argument to be made there, but I don't think that's what they're talking about here, because we're talking biotech and biomanufacturing writ large. What else? Biomanufacturing workforce. There's a whole section on the whole of government initiative to create this biomanufacturing workforce, educational force, engaging in international partners, cooperation, joint research projects, expert exchanges, biotech R&D, and genomics. All right, so human genome project sort of stuff. And, quote, work to promote open sharing of scientific data, including genetic sequencing data. I had a little bender about that yesterday. Key R&D areas include fundamental R&D of emerging biotechnologies, including engineering biology, all right, and also predictive engineering of complex biological systems, including the design, building, testing, and modeling of entire living cells, cell components, and cellular systems. So that's just sort of the quick summary there of that EO. A lot of people have been talking about it lately. I don't want to belabor it because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get down, trying to take us backwards in time. So we'll start here with the most recent one, which is what we talked about yesterday in more detail. I pretty much agree with author Patrick Wood here, and this is essentially a giant opening of a huge money bag. They say they want reports. I think they want RFPs, requests for proposals to go out so that they can start just, you know, dishing money out of this endless black bag here. I think the budget was pretty high, tens of billions of dollars. And then we went back in time. We went back in time and we focused on the work of this piece that Whitney Webb put together back on May 5th of 2021. And in that one, we're talking about the creation of a new biomedical research agency modeled after the U.S. military's High Risk, High Reward Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA. And this new agency would seek to develop innovative and breakthrough treatments for cancer. You've been hearing about that one in the news lately? Moonshot? Alzheimer's disease and diabetes, with a call to, quote unquote, end cancer as we know it. Uh-huh. Okay. This new agency is set to be called ARPA-H, or HARPA. And it will be housed within the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, and would raise the NIH budget to over $51 billion. Unlike other agencies, NIH, ARPA-H, would differ in that the projects it funds would not be peer-reviewed prior to approval. Well, how about that? So, DARPA, if you know much about DARPA's history, you'll know that they do a lot of stuff without telling the people about it, without congressional approval, anything like that. Nothing above board there, really, with DARPA, historically, for the most part. So let's make a health one just like it. That's what they're saying here. Let's make one under the auspices of good health and biotechnology, and we'll just do whatever we want. We'll be creating complex cellular systems within there. What does that mean? Is it going to be like a scene out of Alien 3, you know? We got like all these Ripley clones. Botched clones, suffering, things like that. I don't know. It gets very science fiction. I can't help myself but go into the sci-fi mode when I start reading about this stuff. But the scary thing is it's real. They want to take our money to do it. They don't want to tell us what they're going to be doing in there. They don't want to do any peer-reviewed science. They'll just tell us what the science is and that it's settled. So that's pretty much where we left off yesterday, this creation of HARPA, or ARPA-H, all about biotech, and of course, right there in it. Let's see. ARPA-H will likely heavily fund and promote mRNA vaccines as one of the quote-unquote breakthroughs that will cure cancer. Some of the mRNA vaccine manufacturers that have produced much of the most widely used COVID-19, such as Pfizer and BioNTech, stated that cancer is the next problem to tackle with mRNA. So keep in mind, folks, keep in mind that this, we're going backwards in time. This article was written May 5th of 2021, more than a year ago. So Whitney Webb goes on to describe the long road to ARPA-H. Okay. ARPA-H is not a new and exclusive Biden administration idea. There was a previous attempt to create a health DARPA during the Trump administration in late 2019. Biden began to promote the idea during his presidential campaign as early as 2019, albeit using very different justification for the agency than what had been pitched by its advocates to Trump. In 2019, the same foundation and individuals currently backing Biden's ARPA-H had urged the president, then President Trump to create HARPA, H-A-R-P-A, not for the main purpose of researching treatments for cancer and Alzheimer's, but to stop mass shootings before they happen through the monitoring of Americans for neuropsychiatric warning signs. That's right. So, pre-crime. How does pre-crime get involved in a health initiative? How does biotechnology and rewriting mRNA, rewriting DNA, altering the human genome, how does that fit into health? Where is the, now that we're a little bit in the future from these proposals at the time, you would think if these were still good ideas, maybe their COVID-19 shot would have actually worked, would have actually prevented something or done something. But no, it has not. It has not done that. Everybody, well, all right, I'll stop with the broad brush. A massive percentage of the people who have taken the shots, the mRNA experimental shots with no long-term data, have gotten COVID multiple times, according to the very, very inaccurate PCR test paradigm. So, mRNA, where's the proof of its greatness? Shouldn't COVID have been the first test run, right? The example of what wonderful technology this is? And what are we seeing instead? We're seeing myocarditis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, paralysis, blood clotting, high blood pressure, stroke, embolism. Yeah, it's not good. So for the last few years, one man has been the driving force behind HARPA, former vice chair of General Electric and former president of NBC Universal, Robert Wright. Not the Robert Wright, we know. Through the Suzanne Wright Foundation, named for his late wife, Wright has spent years lobbying for an agency that, quote, would develop biomedical capabilities, detection tools, treatments, medical devices, cures, etc., for the millions of Americans who are not benefiting from the current system, end the quote. While he, like Biden, has cloaked the agency's actual purpose by claiming it will be mainly focused on treating cancer, Wright's 2019 proposal to his personal friend Donald Trump revealed its underlying ambitions. So, let me just pause right there for a moment and point out, did you notice the capabilities list there? Detection tools, treatments, medical devices, cures, etc. Now, we know, after what we've seen over the last 2.5 years, that once COVID became a thing, there was the introduction of something that Brian Berletic coined as the pandemic industrial complex. And I have integrated that industrial complex verbology into my delivery because I think it is completely appropriate. Usually industrial complexes take decades to foment, to form, and to become potentially corrupted. But this one dropped on us ready to go. Right out of the box. Hey, industrial complex, here you go. This is the pandemic one. So those biomedical capabilities that we're talking about here, detection tools, think PCR tests. Think lateral flow tests. Think all these frickin' tests, detection tools. And by the way, I'm sure most of the audience knows this, but the inventor of the PCR test, Kerry Mullis, said that the PCR test, who, by the way, was a Nobel Prize winner, if I recall, or nominee, said the PCR test is not a diagnostic tool. But to great coincidence, he died in 2018 or 2019, I can't remember which. So he's not around to say that anymore. But anyways, biomedical capabilities, detection tools, like I said, PCR tests, lateral flow test, and look at all the new companies, many of which have Bill Gates money in them or other ghoulish COVID-19 money-grubbing persons who are in those revolving doors of conflicts of interest, have a stake in some of these new detection tools. Treatments. Oh, okay. Treatments. Think remdesivir. Think remdesivir. Look into it. There's a LD50 of like 50 to 60% on remdesivir. Medical devices. Oh, medical devices. Think ventilators. Think back to Warp Speed. Think about Trump forcing Dyson Vacuum Company to make ventilators. Cures. Cures. What did they bill to us as a cure? Oh, yeah. Right. The experimental mRNA gene therapy biotechnology juice that they had to redefine what a vaccine is to be able to sell that to us as a vaccine. Oh, but Hesher, it was free. No, it ain't. No, it ain't. They printed $7 trillion. They destroyed your economy. They destroyed your workplace. It ain't free. And they used your tax dollars that they hadn't even collected yet and gave that to Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, et cetera, et cetera. So anyways, back to Wright's 2019 proposal to his personal friend Donald Trump and what that revealed regarding the underlying ambitions here. Well, I'll tell you about that on the other side of a break here with today's news talk.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
If Ukraine is doing such great things on the ground, why are they bombing civilians at work or at their home? This, in any other situation, would be condemned by everybody in the world. The use of these paddle mines, which are quite frankly just horrible. You know, little kids, the kids here have been forced to live with this for 8 or 9 years. So thankfully, they're aware of what they're looking at this point to a large degree, and they warn other kids. But these things look like they could be toys. So some unassuming child could pick one up and break it. They go off on their own too. They're made to go off with very little pressure, specifically so it can kill children. Ukraine, just keep dumping them.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
During the pandemic, 129 billion unrecyclable masks were used and thrown away every month. Over 3 billion masks now pollute the oceans. Let's not turn a blind eye to this disgusting plastic pollution. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. That's right. That is disgusting pollution. Masks, discarded masks, should be considered infectious hospital waste. I've been saying that since the day they tried to tell me to put the ritual muzzle of shame on. Are you kidding me? You just banned straws in California, and now you want to mandate a mask that needs to be thrown away every hour or two? Get out of here. Get out of here. My guest coming up in the second hour, Alan Stevo, has written a book about masks and COVID and all that, in particular, the effects on the youth, kids. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be really interesting. All right, back to this HARPA H idea. If you're just joining me, I'm taking you down, trying to do a bit of a deep dive here, overhead view of transhumanism as it relates to government policy and current events, because it all falls under this giant umbrella. So, as proposed by Wright in 2019, the flagship program of HARPA would be Safe Home, short for Stopping Aberrant Fatal Events by Helping Overcome Mental Extremes. Okay. Wow. That's quite the acronym. You know, I used to be involved in creating acronyms, and I can tell you from experience, we would do crap like that where it's like, well, let's make the program name first, and then we'll come up with the acronym. It was always great fun. But it always smacks me when I see it from the other side. Okay, Safe Home would suck up masses of private data. Can you believe this? Okay, so again, this is the person that proposed this to Trump back in 2019, before all this garbage from, that would be the former vice chair of General Electric and former president of NBC Universal, Robert Wright. So, suck up masses of private data from Apple Watches, Fitbits, Amazon Echo, and Google Home, and other consumer electric devices, as well as information from healthcare providers to determine if an individual might be likely to commit a crime. The data would be analyzed by artificial intelligence algorithms for early diagnosis of neuropsychiatric violence. The Department of Justice's pre-crime approach, known as DEEP, DEEP, was activated just months before Trump left office. It was also justified as a way to stop mass shootings before they happen. Huh, interesting how that dovetails with some very strange events in the media, isn't it? Soon after Biden's inauguration, the new administration began using information from social media to make pre-crime arrests as part of its approach toward combating domestic terror. Given the history of Silicon Valley companies collaborating with the government on matters of warrantless surveillance, it appears that aspects of Safe Home may already be covertly active under Biden, only waiting for the formalization of ARPA-H or HARPA to be legitimized as public policy. I would say that there is good evidence for that. If you go back to my discussion with the Alpha Warrior, Mr. Luna, you'll see a case where this has actually happened. And there are much more than just his. His is a current one to be aware of, though. If you want to find that, just go to your podcasting app and type in Brian McLean and what's his first name? I think it's Andre, or I don't know. His last name's Luna, Alpha Warrior. Type in Brian McLean and Luna TNT. It'll come up. It's really easy to find my shows. All you need is my name and my guest name, or part of my guest name, and you'll find it. So, the national security applications of Robert Wright's HARPA are also illustrated by the man who was its lead scientific advisor, former head of DARPA's Biological Technologies Office, Jeffrey Ling. Not only is Ling the main scientific officer of HARPA, but the original proposal by Wright would have Ling both personally design HARPA and lead it once it was established. Ling's work at HARPA can be summarized by BTO's stated mission, which is to work towards merging biology, engineering, and computer science to harness the power of natural systems for national security. Really, national security. Biology, engineering, let me just think about that for a minute. Merging biology, engineering, and computer science to harness the power of natural systems for national security. BTO-favored technologies are also poised to be the mainstays of HARPA, which plans to specifically use, here comes, advancements in biotechnology, supercomputing, big data, and artificial intelligence to accomplish its goals. The direct DARPA connection to HARPA underscores the agenda behind this coming agency and dates back to the failed biosurveillance project of DARPA's Total Information Awareness Program, which was launched after the events of September 11, 2001. TIA's biosurveillance project sought to develop the, quote, necessary information technologies and resulting prototype capable of detecting the covert release of a biological pathogen automatically and significantly earlier than traditional approaches, accomplishing this by monitoring non-traditional data sources, including pre-diagnostic medical data and behavioral indicators. So, wow, how about that right there? How about that? How does that feel? Does this sound like a health initiative to you? Does this sound like a national security initiative to you? Or does this sound like the institutionalization of transhuman technocratic control grid tactics, techniques, and procedures? That's what it sounds like to me. We'll pick up right there after we take a station break with TNT.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines.
Former President Trump continues to insist he declassified all the records amid the probe into what the FBI sees from his Mar-a-Lago home. There was a second earthquake in Mexico this week, where one woman was killed falling down the stairs of her home while a man died of a heart attack. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is asking allied nations for more support in his country's fight against Russia. He appeared virtually in a pre-recorded message to the UN Assembly on Wednesday afternoon.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. So while normally focused on bioterrorist attacks, the TIA's biosurveillance project also sought to acquire early detection capabilities for normal, quote-unquote normal, disease outbreaks, biosurveillance, and related DARPA projects at the time, such as LifeLog, sought to harvest data through the mass use of some sort of wearable or handheld technology. These DARPA programs were ultimately shut down due to the controversy over claims they would be used to profile domestic dissidents and eliminate privacy for all Americans in the U.S. Well, we've already achieved that. We're already there. We're quite there now. I think everybody knows that. That DARPA's past total surveillance dragnet is coming back to life under a supposedly separate health-focused agency, and one that emulates its organizational model, no less, confirms that TIA-related programs were merely distanced from the Department of Defense when officially shut down. By separating the military from the public image of such technologies and programs, it made them more palatable to the masses, despite the military remaining heavily involved behind the scenes. As Unlimited Hangout has reported, major aspects of TIA were merely privatized, giving rise to companies such as Facebook and Palantir, which resulted in such DARPA projects being widely used and accepted. Now, under the guise of the proposed ARPA-H, DARPA's original TIA would essentially be making a comeback for all intents and purposes as its own spinoff. And then you get into Silicon Valley, the military, and the wearable revolution. This part is pretty crazy. So you've got the most recent effort to create ARPA-H, HARPA, combining with the coordinated push of Silicon Valley into the field of healthcare, specifically Silicon Valley companies that double as contractors to U.S. intelligence or the military, you know, your Microsofts, your Googles, your Amazons. During the COVID-19 crisis, this trend towards Silicon Valley dominance of the healthcare sector has accelerated considerably due to top-down push towards digitalization with telemedicine, remote monitoring, and the like. For example, Amazon launched a wearable back in 2020 that purports to not only use biometrics to monitor people's physical health and fitness, but to track their emotional state as well. The previous year, Amazon acquired the online pharmacy PillPack, and it's not hard to imagine a scenario in which Amazon's Halo Wellness Band is used to offer treatment recommendations that are then supplied by Amazon-owned PillPack. Companies such as Amazon, Palantir, and Google are set to to be intimately involved with ARPA-H's activities, in particular Google, which has launched numerous health tech initiatives back in 2020, set to have a major role in this new agency due to its longstanding ties to the Obama administration and when Biden was vice president, and to President Biden's top science advisor, Eric Lander. Now, as mentioned, Lander is poised to play a major role in ARPA-H slash HARPA, whatever they end up going with, if and when it materializes. Before becoming the top scientist in the country, Lander was president and founding director of the board, the Broad Institute. While advertised as a partnership between MIT and Harvard, the Broad Institute is heavily influenced by Silicon Valley, with two former Google execs on its board, a partner of Silicon Valley venture capital firm Greylock Partners, and the former CEO of IBM, as well as some of its top endowments coming from prominent tech executives. You'll find these tech executives everywhere, everybody. It's crazy when you start peeling back some of these globalist initiatives and these I don't even know what to call this one, this technocratic authoritarian initiative, biotech garbage. Former Google CEO Eric Schmidt, who was intimately involved with Obama's 2012 re-election campaign and who is close to Democratic Party in general, chairs the board, the Broad Institute, as of this April, which again, this is from 2021. In March, Schmidt gave the Institute $150 million to connect biology and machine learning for understanding programs of life. So you got the former CEO of Google there giving $150 million to the Broad Institute to connect biology and machine learning for understanding programs of life. During his time on the Broad Institute, Schmidt also chaired the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence, which I'm going to lead into next here. I want you to know about that. A group of mostly Silicon Valley intelligence and military operatives who have now charted the direction of the U.S. government's policies on emerging tech and AI. Schmidt was also pitched as potential head of a tech industry task force by the Biden administration. So, yeah, there you go. You've got all this stuff going on here, all this tech stuff. This part goes on. It talks about biometric wearables. It talks about COVID-19 and this other thing, the DARPA Predicting Health and Disease Project. It's very detailed work here done by Whitney Webb. And it goes into all kinds of different wearables and things like that. And AI, you know, there's a statement on here worth reading. Given that no AI is 100% accurate and that AI is only as good as the data it is trained on, such a system would be guaranteed to make regular errors. The question is how many? One AI algorithm being used to, quote unquote, predict COVID-19 outbreaks in Israel and some U.S. states is marketed by Diagnostic Robotics. Accuracy, the likely inflated accuracy rate and the company provides for its product is only 73%. That means by the company's own admission, their AI is wrong 27% of the time. Probably it is even less accurate, as the 73% figure has never been independently verified. So that's what a lot of this, you know, that's what a lot of this is about, everybody, especially when it gets into this pre-crime stuff. I mean, it's absurd that we should even be considering pre-crime and biotech and biological human-computer integrations, all this kind of stuff into a health bill, basically, an executive order that just opens a bottomless pit of money for companies like this to come in and just do whatever they want within this, whatever they can fit in under this umbrella. You know, they tell us they're going to do a cancer moonshot, right? That's why I'm doing this. That's why I want you folks to think about this. And I know a lot of you are Whitney Webb fans and Patrick Wood fans and, you know, Boiler Room listeners and TNT listeners and, you know, media maniacs and news hounds. And a lot of you probably know this already, but I think it is still worth going back, looking at it, and just kind of tracking the trajectory here. Biometrics, artificial intelligence, Silicon Valley elitists, so-called elitists, in bed with the government to track and trace everything about us. And then they tell us it's to prepare to fight a global pandemic or a bioterror attack. It is just amazing. It's a very detailed work there. So she closes that by saying, Biden's newly announced agency, if approved by Congress, would integrate those past Obama-era initiatives with Orwellian applications under one roof, but with even less oversight than before. It would also seek to expand and mainstream the uses of these technologies and potentially move toward developing policies that would mandate their use. Policy of mandates, folks. That rings harsh and true and recent and vivid. If ARPA-H is approved by Congress and ultimately established, it will be used to resurrect dangerous and long-standing agendas of the national security state and its Silicon Valley contractors, creating a digital dictatorship that threatens human freedom, human society, and potentially the very definition of what it means to be human. All right, so that was May of 2021 that one came out. And this one I'm about to go into here is from September 17th of 2020. So we've got a theme going here. It's transhumanism holding up technocracy and authoritarianism. So anyways, this one, you can find it Unlimited Hangout by Whitney, posted September 17th, 2020. Probably also available at Last American Vagabond, but I'll be reading from Unlimited Hangout. Google recently teamed up with the Pentagon as part of the new AI-driven predictive health program, though only focused on predictive cancer diagnoses for now. Google and the military have apparent plans to expand the AI model for automating and predicting COVID-19. At the beginning of September, Google Cloud announced that it had won a project from the Pentagon's relatively new Defense Innovation Unit, the DIU, to prototype an AI-enabled digital pathology solution at select Department of Defense facilities. This prototype, per a Google Cloud press release, combines augmented reality telescopes with AI-enabled cancer detection tools that will allegedly improve the accuracy of predictive cancer diagnoses. Okay, well, as we learned in that last article, they can expect to do that with, at the very least, a 27% failure rate. It is the second DIU contract Google has won this year, with the first being related to combating cyber threats. The initial implementation of this Pentagon-funded Google-created digital pathology solution will take place at select defense health agency treatment facilities and Veterans Affairs hospitals in the United States. And the program includes future plans to expand across the broader U.S. military healthcare system. The initiative is part of a larger DIU-led program called Predictive Health. It's also partnered with a joint AI effort of the U.S. military and U.S. intelligence community. The Joint Artificial Intelligence Center, the JAIC's Warfighter Health Initiative. The JAIC, which is currently led by former Silicon Valley executive, is providing much of the funding for the Predictive Health, while its related Warfighter Health Initiative more broadly seeks to field AI solutions that are aimed at transforming military healthcare. In addition to its stated goal of improving accuracy of cancer diagnoses, the implementation of the Google DIU AI-driven medical diagnosis tool aims to show frontline health practitioners that such tools can improve the lives of U.S. troops, according to Google executives. The stuff just goes back so far, everybody. You can kind of see the path here now, right? The combining of artificial intelligence, military intelligence, Silicon Valley advanced tools and big data collection wearables that are constantly reporting not only your location and have microphones and cameras on them, but are also taking biometric information from you and just spitting that out to all these systems. All the way up to the point of doing pre-crime, operations. I mean, it is just nuts. You would not think you'd be reading about the U.S. military, the U.S. intelligence community, the Joint Artificial Intelligence Center, the Warfighter Health Initiative. Why are all these things associated with us normal sandwich-eating people? Why does that have anything to do with your health? Absolutely amazing. Okay, we're going to take a quick station break over here with today's news talk. We'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Remember when Donald Trump labeled the coronavirus involved in the COVID outbreak the China virus? Racist, cried the leftist media. How dare Trump attach the name of a country or a region to a virus? Well, you see, they never heard of German measles, Japanese encephalitis, Spanish flu, Middle East respiratory syndrome, or the others that had already existed. Now we have this. The GRIO reports that advocates, including the Black LGBTQ plus civil rights group National Black Justice Coalition, have expressed concerns about the virus known as monkeypox. The organization has been calling for it to be referred to by its acronym MPV. They say that the name monkeypox is stigmatizing and causes harm to the black community by, quote, upholding white supremacy consciously or otherwise, end quote. Last week, White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre weighed in saying, "We understand, and I know so many other communities understand how a name of a virus can really cause harm to that community. I'm sure the administration will not only change the name, but hold a White House ceremony when they do it." Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Money in the bank may not be safe. In a banking crisis, a bail-in could wipe out deposits. But the mainstream media and most politicians will attempt to distract you from this pressing danger. A bail-in for a failing bank could replace the traditional taxpayer-funded bailout. Unlucky depositors would be sacrificed to prevent financial contagion, and government legislation would allow it. Several nations have passed such legislation. For instance, Australia's financial sector legislation amendment, Crisis Resolution Powers and Other Measures, Act 2018. Technocrats at the Bank for International Settlements Financial Stability Board established the global bail-in regime under the leadership of Board Chairman Mark Carney, starting in 2011. Carney now spruiks the dangers of climate change at the United Nations.
Scotland is to cut down more than 14 million trees to make way for wind turbines. The green dream of wind and solar is a nightmare.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back. So I'm going to go ahead and just point you folks to that one so that you can finish reading it, because I want to get to this next one here. Again, that was September 17, 2020, posted at Unlimited Hangout. New Pentagon-Google partnership suggests AI will soon be used to diagnose COVID-19. But then it gets super creepy when you go all the way back to May 4th of 2020. May 4th. Think back to where we were, May 4th, 2020. And you can find this one at TLAV and Unlimited Hangout also by Whitney. It's called Techno Tyranny: How the U.S. National Security State is Using Coronavirus to Fulfill an Orwellian Vision. Last year, a government commission called for the U.S. to adopt an AI-driven mass surveillance system far beyond that used in any other country in order to ensure American hegemony in artificial intelligence. Now, many of the obstacles they had cited as preventing its implementation are rapidly being removed under the guise of combating the coronavirus crisis. This one is crazy and it's long, so you're going to want to read this if you haven't read it. Again, it's called Techno Tyranny: How the U.S. National Security State is Using Coronavirus to Fulfill an Orwellian Vision, from May 4th, 2020, which you can find at Unlimited Hangout and TLAV. So this, what is this I guess it's not so new anymore, but last year, a government body dedicated to examining how artificial intelligence can address the national security and defense needs of the United States discussed in detail the structural changes that the American economy and society must undergo in order to ensure technological advantage over China, according to a recent document acquired through a FOIA request. This document suggests that the U.S. follow China's lead and even surpass them in many aspects related to AI-driven technologies, particularly their use of mass surveillance. This perspective clearly clashes with the public rhetoric of prominent U.S. government officials and politicians on China, who have labeled the Chinese government's technology investments and export of its surveillance systems and other technologies as a major threat to Americans' way of life. The FOIA document obtained by the Electronic Privacy Information Center was produced by a little-known U.S. government organization called the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. Okay, now I can never recall that when I'm trying to remember it, because I bring this up often while I'm on air here on the Brian McLean Show or over at Alternate Current Radio on the Boiler Room, but it is the NSCAI, National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. See, they did not name that acronym backwards like I was talking about earlier. They did the they just did the name. You can tell because you can't remember it. NSCAI, don't forget it. National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence. It's important. It's not just about AI. It was created by the 2018 National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA, and its official purpose is to consider the methods and means necessary to advance the development of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and associated technologies to comprehensively address the national security and defense needs of the United States. All right, so they go on to talk about the NSCAI is a key part of the government's response to what is often referred to as the coming fourth industrial revolution, which has been described as a revolution characterized by discontinuous technological development in areas like artificial intelligence, big data, fifth generation telecommunications networking, nanotechnology, biotechnology, robotics, and the Internet of Things, and quantum computing. However, the main focus is ensuring that the United States maintain a technological advantage in artificial intelligence, machine learning, and other associated technologies related to the national security and defense. The vice chair of the NSCAI, Robert Work, former deputy secretary of defense and senior fellow at the Hawkish Center for a New American Security, described the commission's purpose as determining, quote, how the U.S. national security apparatus should approach artificial intelligence, including a focus on how the government can work with industry to compete with China's civil-military fusion concept. The recently released NSCAI document is a May 2019 presentation entitled Chinese Tech Landscape Overview. Throughout the presentation, the NSCAI promotes the overhaul of the U.S. economy and way of life as necessary for allowing the U.S. to ensure it holds a considerable technological advantage over China, as losing this advantage is currently deemed a major national security issue by the U.S. national security apparatus. This concern about maintaining a technological advantage can be seen in several other U.S. military documents and think tank reports, several of which have warned that the U.S.'s technological advantage is quickly eroding. So, isn't that interesting, everybody? Isn't that fascinating? The main focus of this group is in artificial intelligence, machine learning, other associated technologies related to national defense, and artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence. Where did we see artificial intelligence in this other almost 2 hour long journey now? Oh, right. It's all over this stuff. It is all over this stuff. Track and trace, constant surveillance, wearable devices, tests, new technologies that don't even need to be proven out on humans. They can inject it into 8 mice, a couple ferrets, tell you it's all good, and then work towards mandating it to you. The recently released NSCAI document, it's not very recent anymore. Not very recent anymore. This article is more than 2 years old now. The U.S. government and establishment media outlets often blame alleged China espionage or Chinese government's more explicit partnerships with private technology companies in support of their claim that the U.S. is losing this advantage over China. Yeah, well, maybe we should just totally federalize everything and just have complete opaque connections to Silicon Valley, to these devices in our pockets, to all these apps, to all this biometric stuff. And let's have our government connect that to our healthcare, to our health records. And let's have that connected to our social media. And let's have that all connected to our banking life, to our purchasing life, to our browsing life, to our browser searches, to our text messages, right? It all gets sucked up. It all gets sucked up. And then they have that Palantir thing and all the other things similar to it, Prism, that can parse that data and make it usable for those that want to track and trace us or do predictive health on us or predictive mental health on us. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine if you had to live in a world where some authority, some social worker, some Facebook cop, some HARPA cop, some ARPA-H cop could come and take you out of your workplace and say, well, the AI just spit back your most recent tweet, and that triggered a red flag, and then that had the AI cross-reference your medical records, and we saw that your brother's cousin's aunt's sister's uncle's son took some Prozac, and then we checked your sewage, and we saw some signs of smallpox and other molecules in there that lead us to think that you have a type of depression that might be a problem. So we're going to collect you. We got to collect you from work. Don't worry about it. Your boss will be compensated. And you're going to come with us. You're going to come with us. You're going to go to this state hospital. You're going to go to this tent city, something like that. Does it sound crazy? I don't know. It sounds less and less crazy by the day when you read these policies. This executive order, and you know, that's the path I'm trying to lead everybody on here, all right? This was my path, at least, because I've been researching this stuff for a long time. I already knew what to expect from technocracy. I already knew what to expect from authoritarians. I already knew what to expect from globalism, from eugenicists. And then it all just starts to dovetail together when COVID hits, doesn't it? Yeah. So it says in that FOIA requested document, data is the new oil, and China is awash with data. And they don't have the same restraints that we do around collecting it and using it because of the privacy difference between our countries. This notion that they have the largest labeled data set in the world is going to be a huge strength for them. That was a quote. Here's another example. Michael Dempsey, former acting director of national intelligence and current government funded fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, argued in The Hill that, quote, it's quite clear, though, that China is determined to erase our technological advantage and is committing hundreds of billions of dollars to this effort. In particular, China is determined to be a world leader in such areas as artificial intelligence, high performance computing, and synthetic biology. These are the industries that will shape life on the planet and the military balance of power for the next several decades. Wow. So, there you go. There you have it. Your data is the new oil. China has been very good at stealing everyone's data. If you're on TikTok, they got your data too. And Yeah, I guess our government thinks that that is one of the most important things to our national security. Because if you look into this, if you look further into this, maybe I'll do a part three on this and we can look further into it. But I think we've pretty much made the point here and laid the breadcrumb trail out so you folks can research this yourself, read this stuff yourself, follow through the links, see where the other connections are. Email me, Brian McLean at tntradio.live if you want to talk about it. Getting a few listener emails. I want to thank those of you that have emailed me. I don't always get back. I'll try to get better at that. But I do read them all, and I appreciate you for sending emails. Big shout out to everyone that sent me an email. All right, we're gonna go to news, and we'll be right back. On the other side, we'll talk about masks a little bit. That'll be interesting. We'll talk about masks with Alan Stevo. All right, you're listening to Today's News Talk, and we'll be back.